Closer, the Entrepreneur's Circle.
Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at On Air Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automagically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at eric@onairbrands.com so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back, folks, to another episode of The Entrepreneur Circle. I am always your most happy and humbled host, Eric Cabral. With me today, I have a dude that I'm so excited to jam with, get to know as you hear and get to know him as well. But I just want to welcome, before we even get everything started, welcome to the show, Bennett Maxwell.
Thanks, Eric. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, brother. I want to uncover so much with you and get our hands dirty, so to speak. So if you don't know who Bennett is, he is the founder of Dirty Dough, but originally was a passive investor, a high school buddy of his who started the company originally, just got burnt out and said, hey, man, you want to take this over? So you grabbed it up and you started to buy and come into the idea of, hey, franchises are really cool. You saw an opportunity in Arizona, you're originally and in Utah, and said, hey, man, there's a cookie company here. I invest in real estate. But why don't I just start a franchise? So you started the franchise, you started ownership of Dirty Dough and started to sell franchises to other entrepreneurs. And I love this title that I've heard you say, where you want to empower more people through entrepreneurship, which is a wonderful mission to be on. So before we get into the question here that I have for you, and I hope I summed it up correctly, brother.
Yes.
But what I see of you and what I recognize and honor is I see you as a family guy, beautiful family. You're a fitness guy, which is key, right, to getting through the dirty dough days. And also you're an investor, right? You're a finance guy. You have a grasp on your finances. So just for everyone knowing who's in the room, and I've kind of shared your story in a quick sort of Cliff Notes version. Given all that you've experienced there, and if anybody were to look you up, you know, there's a lot of press on you and things that have occurred recently. That experience of start to now, is there anything that you would have changed if you can go back to yourself and like whisper in your ear and be like, yeah, bro, why don't you do this a little bit differently?
I'm sure there's a lot of things, you know, if I waved away a magic wand. Right before the show, you know, we're talking philosophy. And the philosophy that I'm really buying into is like, we are who we are and we do what we do. So that's really helped me going back and, you know, I guess avoiding asking that question of regret. Like whatever happened, happened, and that's the way the universe was. So I don't want to say I want to go back and change the universe, but here's something that came in my mind. With Dirty Dough specifically, we went from 12 months ago, we had 7 franchises open. And then today we have over 70.
Wow.
That was too quick.
Wow.
Like when I say too quick, it was just everything's happening all at once and it's quick and you stumble and you fall and you don't even have time to fix those mistakes oftentimes. So I would say that's the thing if I could change. Go a little slower.
Wow. Go a little slower. Yeah. What are some of the hiccups or speed bumps that you know, like wish you had more knowledge or experience or people that could have helped, you know, with that problem and solve that problem?
Yeah, one of the big things, so we've been advertising ourselves as a very simplistic food franchise because we pre-produce all of the cookies and ship out pre-portioned cookie dough pucks to each franchise and you just pop them in the oven. That's a lot of capital to build that and a lot of risk. And so we started and spent, I mean, we're into this $2 million before, by the time I bought the company and we opened our first store, because you're building the infrastructure and the machines and all the equipment. Well, going back, I think I would have started with a co-packer, so I didn't have to invest all that upfront because that was a pretty big risk. Now it looks like it's paying off for sure. That was one thing. Right now we're adding different product lines to the company, edible cookie dough and ice cream sandwiches, and testing a handful of different things. But it's like, well, we already have 70 franchises open, you know? So now you have to go retrofit mm-hmm. some of those, where if it was, you know, if we did one store and then a year later did second store and then 2 years later did five stores, then you could have vetted those. But at the same time, you know, to I guess give myself a little grace, the quicker that we grow, the quicker the economies of scale play in and the quicker that we're lowering our cost to our franchisees. So, you know, there's pros and cons to everything, but that's definitely something, looking back, I'm like, yeah, I think I could have saved a lot by just starting with somebody else outsourcing the dough production.
Yeah. Can you talk about I got a couple of questions. I gotta remember, let me take some notes while you're jamming. But the idea of starting a franchise, I know you were investing in real estate at the time, but then you heard on a podcast, curious which one it was, that said, hey, you know, to truly build wealth, you have to not only own real estate, but you also got to buy businesses. And you're like, oh, wait a minute, I'm not doing both of those things. What was that moment for you? And like, what made you to finally take action?
Yeah, I don't remember what the podcast was. I remember it was in December of 2020, though, because that's right when I was like, okay, I'm going to buy it. Like, what the hell? I'm going to shoot my shot and just get into it. And that's kind of been my philosophy. Like, I'm never going to be prepared, so just jump in. That was a big moment for me. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to, you know, play my hand. And then I got an advisor shortly after that, maybe 6 months later. And I had two properties under construction. And I'm like, the guy's name is John Richards. And I was like, John, what do I do? Like, I need to invest more into dirty dough, but I already have these two properties being built. And, you know, property values were going sky high, especially in Utah. And I'm like, I'm going to walk away from, I don't know, $150,000 of equity from the time I started building till now, but I need a little bit more money to close, but I want to invest that money in dirty dough. And he's like, real estate, you can make good returns. Like, you can make 5, 10, 20, 30%. Businesses, you'll make 1,000x returns. Invest in yourself, invest in your business, hyper-focus. And so I did that. And that's been a huge, huge payoff, because like, for what I bought the company for and what the last raise was, it has gone up by 100x, the valuation. I'm like, yeah, that's a much better investment than the real estate was. So I'm starting to learn, still trying to figure it out though.
Yeah, you remind me of, and shed some light on this, on how many of the 70 you implemented this strategy. But for anyone who's familiar with the real McDonald's and the business that they're in, you know, there's that famous quote. You remember his name? I'm having a brain fart here.
Ray Crockett.
Yeah, Crockett's say, you know, hey, anybody know what business I'm in? And the kids all say hamburger. And he's like, no, our business is real estate. Yeah. Right. And anyone who's watched The Founder, great movie with Michael Keaton. How much of the dirt do you own? Was that part of the strategy too, out of these 70 locations?
No, I think it would be a great strategy, but because we can operate out of 600 square feet.
Oh, wow.
You're usually in a strip mall.
Gotcha.
Know? Like, you're one space out of 13 or 10. So it would be cool if we could buy the real estate. But at that point, we're not, you know, McDonald's has it good because they're buying the real estate and they have one tenant and it's their franchisee. So they're not, you know, so much a landlord. Where this model you would. Now, we do have a handful of franchisees that do own the real estate, but that's on the franchisee side. On the corporate side, we don't yet. If we go to the model that you have like standalone stores with drive-throughs, like kind of small, like Dutch Bro style, then that would be a great play for corporate to buy the real estate and then lease it to the franchisees. And we'll see where we go. It's a very different model, but we will start testing that here in the next year.
Gotcha. So in your plans, in your performers, is there some sort of phase three or four of this where you're like, okay, hey, we're going to start test driving these and duplicate that system if it works?
Like the standalone real estate?
Yes.
Awesome. It's just a lot. Like, you can build a store. The construction cost is like, I don't know, $150,000. But if you're, I mean, you know, to outfit an existing building. But to build from the ground up, you know, you're $500,000 to $1 million. So it's a different strategy. But if you could do that, you have a drive-through on one end, maybe a walk-in window on the other one, like a Dutch Bros, and you have a little bit more drink products, which we're adding. We just added coffee to a handful of stores, and now we're adding dirty sodas, which is becoming a big thing here in Utah and expanding out. I just saw Sonic start saying dirty sodas. I was like, what?
Uh-oh.
Sonic's doing dirty sodas? So anyways, depending on how these new products sell, I think that's definitely what the way we're going to test.
Yeah.
And it should be within a year. So,
okay. I'm going really nonlinear here because these questions are coming to me as fast as we're talking. But so your original high school buddy who was baking cookies out of his kitchen, like in his apartment or whatever it was, his dorm, was like, hey, dude, you want to invest in this? Like, were you at the time thinking it would become what it all has become? But, and also, was it good at the time? Like, was it that, I mean, you said he was selling out like crazy. Like, what was it that inspired you, and what did you take from there and still apply to now?
I mean, I think it was, yeah, it was just one cookie. It was just chocolate chip. It was delivery only, and like a like this ugly brown box with a little ugly sticker on it that said Dorito. But I'm like, whatever. Again, my mentality was like, how much do I have to invest? Oh, I could just go sell another handful of solar deals, and I'll work harder. I invested without knowing too much. He had actually told me that he was operating out of a commercial kitchen. I show up maybe 4 months later for the first time because I never even visited him. And I show up to his apartment, like the shitty apartment. And he opens the oven. It's like, and I'm like, bro, where's the commercial kitchen? He's like, oh, I meant to say that we're going to get one. I'm like, what? Whatever, dude. So
had you given him the money at that time already?
Yes, I'd already invested. But yeah, he had thrown it on Facebook. And I just, being in Utah, I see Crumble blowing up. And I knew that their model was owner-occupied. Like, you have to move out of state to go live where you're going to run the store, and you're working 60, 80 hours. So I'm like, if we could go a different path and make it more simplistic, that's kind of the vision. But I was completely hands-off until I bought it. Like, gave him some money, and that was kind of it. I was like, I will help you when you start franchising it. I would love to help with franchise sales. But we just never got to that point. So when I took it over, I already had that vision of like, we're going to franchise it. We're going to simplify it. We're going to replicate the model from Mrs. Fields that's been around for almost 50 years and Great American Cookie, almost 50 years, that all uses centralized production. But we're going to compete with Crumble and the consumer facing with these large gourmet multi-flavored cookies by, you know, and it came down to finding specialized machines, which we did.
Yeah. Okay. And he was completely bought out at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. And then, I mean, he stayed on a little bit, as kind of like a consultant, helping us with some recipes and things like that until, you know, I hired more people. And then he went and started another franchise. I mean, I still talk with him pretty frequently. He has another one called Indie Clover, which is like a Plato's Closet competitor. Okay. He's doing really well with that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate he got burnt out, right? Cause now he's watching you, take this, to the next level. Since you brought it up, and you know, there's so much content, there's so much conversation around, you know, the lawsuits and the back and forth and the cookie wars between, Dirty Dough and Crumble. Is there anything that you haven't shared? Is there any thoughts or ideas or lessons learned for anyone out there who is starting a franchise or coming up with something from scratch, that they should be cautious of?
On the lawsuit side?
Yeah, just in the experience. I mean, because I know it went from, you know, from zero to 160, and then now everything's finally settled, right? From my understanding. But yeah, any takeaways from there that you want to share?
As far as like avoiding a lawsuit, I mean, my opinion is still the same as when the lawsuit was filed. Like, there's no merit to it. Like, it's just a way to stifle competition. So how do you avoid that? I don't know, kind of keep your head down. But at the same time, don't keep your head down because you need the exposure. When I bought the company, there was a product called, we called it the Pazuki. It was a cookie with ice cream on it. And then when I purchased that, I hired a trademark attorney, and he's like, hey, that's owned by BJ's Restaurants. So it's like, okay, we could quickly change that. We also had some design element on one of the packaging from forever ago. that was trademarked by Insomnia Cookies. So, but I didn't know that. I had to get a trademark attorney and like, hey, evaluate everything. And then the other thing is we found that we had some rights to the name Dirty Dough, but there's some other one. And then there's a pizza company called Dirty Dough. So we had to resolve that. All of that I wouldn't have known unless I hired somebody to go and do the trademark and IP research. So I think starting out with that is super important to make sure that you have everything done. And if you just do it online, you can, right? But it's like, I want it for Dirty Dough for food delivery and for bakery and for nationwide shipping. And I want it for apparel, you know, in case I want to start doing swag.
Yeah.
So just a little bit more background research.
I mean, what I'm taking away from this, and I'm guessing a lot of people in the audience as well, is you got to have a killer attorney or team of legal that can really navigate through and be experts in this field. Because like you said, like, you know, being creative is something that's hard to control. And if you're having ideas for names and, you know, different types of cookies and recipes and whatever it is, it's challenging to be like, oh, let's hold back. Let's talk to the attorneys, right? Versus just like, let's go. Let's just like fire ready, aim, and then deal with it later. You can't in this industry, right? Everything has to be vetted and insured. It's not being used. How frustrating is that?
We have our IP attorney, obviously for IP, and then we use another law firm for just like general counsel, you know, setting up all legal documents. And we have another attorney law firm that does like litigation. And then we have another one that does franchise law. So there's a lot of laws that you have to freaking figure out. I'm always dealing with four different groups because it is very regulated, right? It's the FTC is regulating the franchise industry, which is really good because it's protecting the franchisees. But yeah, you have to dot your I's and cross your T's because I've not done that a lot of times. And then you have to go back and clean it up. And it's way, way harder the cleanup rather than, especially if you're raising money, you know, like institutional investors, they want to know all of the legal side and the documents and your bylaws or your operating agreement. And then they're like, wait, why does this say this and this says that? And you're like, I don't know because I didn't check. So having somebody come and do, I mean, they called it a health check, you know, once I really hired the first like corporate attorney and they found a ton of errors that I'd already made.
Mm. Any aspirations to go public?
Yeah, I don't know much about going public, but it sounds really cool. You know?
It sounds like a big payday, right?
So we brought on a management group called Craveworthy Brands. He was the former CEO of Jimmy John's, who's now our CEO. So we did a partnership with them at the beginning of this year, and they have it in sight. So if they go public and we kind of wrap ourselves up into that, that's a potential. If not, you know, selling to a larger private equity that specializes in buying food franchise brands, which there's quite a few of them, that would be the other option.
Who would be the top three that you'd want to have that conversation with?
Inspire Brands, I think, is a really good one. Yum Brands, that one's like, you know, Taco Bell, KFC, Pizza Hut, Fat Brands. I guess those are the first three that come to my mind that, you know, each of them own several thousand restaurants. Because like rewinding a little bit, I like money, right? I like nice things, but that's like the lowest priority for me right now because I'm a young kid still. I'm 31 years old. I'm still a kid. I don't know anything. And we've sold 450 franchises. So that's about 200 franchisees that are buying like maybe 2.5 territories each. I feel a lot of weight to make sure that they are taken care of. And then we've raised about $5 million in the past as well. So I have investors as well that were crazy enough to trust me. So I'm like, and that's my second priority. And then third priority is anything that's left over. So really finding an investor or partner that is going to fulfill those first two needs, really propel and increase the likelihood of success for franchisees is number one priority. And the number two is the investors. So I'm always on the lookout for that right partner. And I definitely have a different mindset of like, I don't really care about the equity or the capital. I'm looking at this as I'm still learning. Like, I'm learning this business. I learned my last business, and maybe in my 40s, I'll start really trying to go for gold. I'm just trying to gain as much skills as I possibly can while increasing my network.
I love it, dude. That's powerful. So, you know, your focus and priorities being number one, the franchisees, and then number two, your investors. Let's get a little bit into your personal, like as far as the priorities are in your life and making sure that you're always maintaining a somewhat, you know, it's kind of a myth, a balanced life, right? Because there's always seasons. But, you know, you're a family guy. We talked about this. You're a fitness guy. How do you incorporate that into your business life? And how do you, oh, actually the other way around?
Yeah. And I didn't before. When I had my solar company, I got to 310 pounds at 5'8". That's pretty big. Like I couldn't walk up the stairs without like, and I sold the solar company. So I bought Dirty Dough. 6 months later, I sold the solar company and I achieved the goal at the time, which was to be a millionaire before 30, like that $1 million net worth. And it felt great for a few days, you know, and then you just go back to your normal base levels of happiness. And immediately I started saying the next goal, like I'm going to put everything aside, health, family, relationships for the next goal, because I told myself it was just till $1 million. Right. And then I immediately saw that next goal. So I started doing some like internal soul searching and therapy. And that's also when I started getting into some psychedelic therapy and things like that. And I realized that none of that, like I was just very short-sighted. I want money, but why do I want money? Oh, I want money to, because that buys me free time and vacation time. And why do I want vacation time? To be with my family. And when I'm with my family, I'm happy. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Well, after I sold it, I'm like, wait, why can't I just be with my family every day? Like I don't need to go to Mexico to be with my family. I could just do it every day. So at that moment, like I set a hard priority and I'm like, I don't work past 5 and I don't work weekends. Just like you said, I'll still do sprints. It's like, hey, babe, we're raising capital for the next 3 weeks. I'm going to be working more than usual. And then, you know, I'll take a week off or whatever. But that was very important. And then it was also equally important to, because I still continually will fall back into my old cycles, to give both my wife and my kids permission to remind me like, hey, daddy, let's go on a daddy daughter date. And I'm like, I'm working, I'm emailing, you know, let me finish up. And I tell them, I'm like, grab me and say, daddy, I'm the most important thing. Remember that. And they do that. And it's so easy for me to be like, of course you are. Of course, screw whoever's on this phone call. Like, it doesn't matter. And the same thing with my wife, because it is very hard. So setting the priority is one thing. And then I kind of set a fail safe switch on telling them, hey, this is my commitment. When I'm not honoring my commitment, please let me know so I can correct that.
Mm, so good, dude. I love that. Giving them the script to remind you, you know, it's like the pill. Right, dad, you got to take the red pill, get out of the matrix right now, and
yeah,
you know, and let's have a conversation. Let's go have some fun. It sounds like you read the book, either 18 Summers or the Family Board Meeting. Does that sound familiar?
Nope. Yeah, but yeah. Tell me about them. They sound like they're going to be great books.
Oh, they're great books. Yeah, the author's name escapes me. He's a great guy, but Yeah. Check those out. They're quick reads, but it's exactly what you're talking about. The daddy-daughter days, one-on-one time with your kids, because I know you have 3, but just spending time because they all need you individually, because, you know, they're different when they're by themselves, and uninterrupted, no devices,
yeah,
things like that for a 4-hour block.
Last summer, I had a trip to Vegas planned and I had a meeting with a handful of people, a guy that owns like 100 something KFCs and Allegiant Stadium, because we're looking at getting into there. Anyways, I scheduled the meeting, threw it on the calendar. And then a few days later, like the day before I was supposed to go, I see Mia, that's my oldest daughter, Mia's kindergarten graduation. And I didn't really think much of it. I'm just like, oh crap. So I went and talked with her. I'm like, hey, sorry, we could do something before, we could do something after, but I'm going to be gone that day. I'm flying out in the morning. I'm coming back in the evening. So it's like, it's quick. And she's like, okay, I understand. You know, I love you, whatever. And then my wife tells me like an hour later, she's like, she's only going to graduate once. And I'm like, that hit me. Like, it doesn't matter. That's just kindergarten. She's only going to graduate once. I texted the 5 people that I had meetings with. And I was very upfront and honest. Like, it's my daughter's kindergarten graduation. I don't want to miss it. And all of them respected, well, at least I felt like they respected it. And of the 5, I just rescheduled it for the next week and I still met with 4 of them. And like looking back at that moment, I'm like, that's when I committed. I'm like, I'm never going to miss a dance recital or a competition or gymnastics or graduation. Like, because I know in 10 years, I'll look back and I'll still have the memory that I have. otherwise I wouldn't have the memory of like going and meeting with those guys in Vegas. Right. So that was also kind of a helpful tool, to further that commitment.
Yeah, brother. I'd say even more importantly, Mia's going to have that memory, right? Of you in the stands, man. That's massive. Think about all the times. I don't know about you, but you know, I didn't grow up in a perfect childhood, but you know, there were so many moments where it probably would have been better with dad or mom present, I'm sure. But yeah, dude, thanks for sharing that. As we wind down, brother, this has been really good, man. I could spend, you know, another couple hours jamming with you here. But I love this segment of the show, even though the show has been modified a bit to be a little more streamlined, and I appreciate you, you know, being a part of that. Embracing the F word. I just love the idea of embracing failure and learning lessons through those, because I grew up the opposite. Like, failure's not an option, dude. And I was like, oh, wow, no, this is a way for me to learn. So if you could share any stories or anything in your life or business that, you know, would be considered from the outside a failure, but it was like, no, this was necessary for me to become this or do this.
Yeah. I've had so many like failures, but I early on, I read the Rich Dad Poor Dad, and it was, in your 20s, work to learn, not to earn. So when you phrase it like that, it's very easy to like, you know, I did door to door for several years selling a lot of different products, and you get a lot of FUs, like the other F word.
the real F word.
And you get a lot of those. So you don't make any money. It's 100% commission based. So rather than like, oh crap, I didn't make any money, I failed at that door, it's how can I craft my pitch differently to grow on the next one? But like when I decided to go do door to door sales, and I was in pre-med and I wanted to be a pediatrician. I had one semester left to graduate with the bachelor's degree. And I dropped out, and everybody told me that I was, you know, I'm going to be a failure, especially my mom. She's like, you're crazy. I think that was a big thing. And it wasn't to me ever about education. I value education extremely highly. It was just valuing that I want to teach myself at my own pace. And I don't want to learn about history, you know? So I think dropping out of school was seen as a big failure, which I'm going to argue that it wasn't. I also think that getting into solar, I thought I was a failure. Like when I started my first company, cause I'd invested a few hundred grand and it looked like it wasn't going to make it. And then again, I'm just like, okay, well, this was probably still more beneficial than if I went to a business school, and I got all the experience within a year. Yeah. It cost me a little bit extra, but within a year. So, but that was also not. And then same thing with Dirty Dough, you know, especially for that first year, every single week, I'm like, why did I do this? We're losing so much money. We're not a franchise yet. Is it going to make it? And I thought I was a failure that whole time too, but it's just kind of like, if you keep pushing through those failures, then they end up either becoming knowledge or success.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that, dude. What type of physician were you looking to be, or what practice?
Pediatrician.
Dude.
I thought that was like what girls wanted, right? Like a doctor and kids, and I like kids.
That played
and
then guitar. When I dropped,
yeah, and then I was gonna, and I don't know, I get queasy with blood. Like I remember like forcing myself to like watch surgery videos because I'm just like, I need to get used to this.
Oh man, dude, there's a parallel universe where you took that path, but you were a 310-pound pediatrician. Screw that, man. No. Good for you. That's awesome, brother. So. We're getting to the last part of the show, which saddens me because, yeah, I want to get to know you a little bit more. Hopefully we can continue the conversation at the time. But in one word, brother, how do you help people?
Can I use two? Because it's in my mission statement. Okay, I'll just do one. Joy. But the mission statement, my life's mission statement is finding joy and fulfillment despite life's dirtiness in myself and others. So
we say that again.
It's hard to narrow down to one, but I would say joy first, and then fulfillment attributes to that joy.
Yeah. So, what's your mission statement again?
To find joy and fulfillment despite life's dirtiness, which speaks to one, you know, dirty dough, the play on words, but don't wait for life to be perfect, because it will never be perfect. And for me personally, it was, don't wait to sell your solar company to find more joy and fulfillment.
Yeah. Good for you, man. Congratulations on everything. You seem like a really good dude. If people want to reach out to you, have more conversations, buy some cookies or franchise, what's the best way they can reach you?
Yeah, I have a website that's linked to all of my social medias, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. It's just bennettmaxwell.com. Dirtydough.com is to get some cookies or look at franchising opportunities. And then I also run a podcast that it's all about joy and fulfillment despite life's dirtiness called Deeper Than Dough, you know, More Than Money.
Yeah, I love that, dude. Who came up with the name?
I did, and I'm proud of it because I'm usually not that creative, but I felt like that was good.
You're crushing on the creative side too, man. I love the branding too. I didn't get into that. That's my jam. I love branding. But did you hire out a firm for that, or how did that all work out? Yeah.
The messaging and the, like, if you look at the branding and the messaging behind it, it's all, you know, we care about your feelings and life gets messy and that's okay. The inside matters most because these are multi-layered cookies. All of that was like me pushing my agenda of the joy and fulfillment through mental health. But as far as like the branding and the logos, that's not me. I need to get you to give me some tips on that.
Happy to always jump in, and I'll get paid through cookies. So. But yeah, brother, appreciate the heck out of you, man. Thanks for this conversation and talk soon.
Thanks, Eric.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.